we have covered chapter 12 and we were halfway in verse number 15. So let us just recap what has happened so far in chapter 12. Chapter 12, which is called Bhakti Yoga, started with a question from Arjuna. He wanted to know which is the more superior form of worship. So in verse number 1, he asked Krishna, those that worship you in a manifest form versus those who worship you in unmanifest form, which type of devotee is more superior? And Krishna told him that the devotee, in verse number 2, the devotee who worships him with form is what type of devotee? He says, I consider such a devotee as the most perfect devotee. I consider most perfect in yoga. Yoga, teme yuktatama mata, meaning such a devotee is the most perfect devotee. And in verses 3 and 4, he defined what is worship of the unmanifest. And for such a devotee, he says what? What is the conclusion of a devotee who worships God in unmanifest form? In verse number 4. What is the conclusion? What will happen to this devotee? They will come to me. So, te prapnuvanti mam eva. Mam means God. Prapnuvanti means they will attain God. Meaning, they will attain moksha. Thus, the devotee who worships with form is considered by Krishna to be the most perfect devotee, but will not attain moksha. But the devotee who worships Lord without form will attain moksha. Thus, obviously, the question will be, why should we then worship the form, right? Since the worship of formless will lead to moksha. So, in verse number 5, he gave us the reason. He said, most of us should start with worship of the form because we have one common defect in us, and that is deha vadbir, embodied beings, meaning we have so much of attachment to our body. When we have so much of attachment to this body, not only do we all our time and what we call effort is towards pleasing this body, taking care of this body, we always worried what will people think of us, what is our how do we project ourselves to society, number one. Number two, when we are attached to this body, we are attached to everything else that is attached to this body, meaning relationships, possessions, positions, fame, name, money, etc. So Krishna says, until you can learn to detach your mind away from all this, how is it possible? Because to worship Lord in the unmanifest form needs a very refined mind, needs a very focused mind. But if your mind is so involved in gross things, how are you going to turn your attention to the very unmanifest form of the Lord? Thus, to understand the Lord in unmanifest form is basically Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga means it requires us to go through Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. And to go through this Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, you need a very refined mind. You need a very pure mind. You need a very introvert mind, not an extrovert mind. But if your mind is so occupied with your body, your relations, your mind, your relationships, your money, etc., how can that body tune itself to the higher goals in life? So he says, never mind, if you can't do that. So what is Bhakti Yoga? Actually, Bhakti Yoga is 5 levels. That is what Krishna wants to say in chapter 12. Bhakti Yoga is not just devotion, just going to temple and shedding tears for the Lord. That is not Bhakti. Bhakti means there must be devotion in your studies also. In your Jnana Yoga path, when you study the scriptures, there also must be Bhakti. That is the highest level of Bhakti Yoga. So Krishna says, never mind, if you are not ready for that, come down to level number 4. Level number 4 he described to us as 6 in verses 6, 7 and 8. What is level number 4? He says, at least try to see me Aneka Rupa bhakta, become aneka rupa bhakta, see me in everything in creation. So have whatever people you meet, whatever things you see in creation, try to see divinity everywhere. So what you should do is, you should be a aneka rupa bhakta. Before you come to arupa bhakta, that is formless, at least be a aneka rupa bhakta. And you say, and what is the, if you become an aneka rupa bhakta, what is Lord's promise to you? If you can see God everywhere in creation, what is Lord's promise to you? He says in verse 7, Mrityu samsara sagara. I will uplift you from the ocean of birth and death. Which means what? If you can learn to see me everywhere in creation, Krishna says, Samudarta, I will uplift you from Mrityu samsara sagara, from this ocean of birth and death, which means what? No moksha. I will bring you to the path of knowledge. I will create the right environment for you to receive this knowledge. Why? Because you still have to come to Jnana Yoga. Right? So, if you can learn to see me everywhere, you can appreciate divinity everywhere, then I will uplift you away from this ocean of birth and death, meaning I will guide you on the path of knowledge. I'll find the right place, the right guru, the right conditions for you to attain knowledge. So you say, Lord, but I'm not able to see you everywhere. I've not reached that level of bhakti. He says, never mind, come down to level 3. What is level 3? In verse number 9, he said, practice, abhyasa, use the word abhyasa, practice. If you can't see divinity everywhere, if you cannot be a aneka rupa bhakta, be a eka rupa bhakta. At least worship me in one particular form. Okay, never mind. If you can't see me in everywhere, because we can see God in our family, but in our enemies we cannot see God. So he says, never mind, doesn't matter. At least worship me in one particular form. Go to temple, worship me in your house. Become practice. Keep on practicing this eka rupa bhakti. Okay, you say, Lord, I'm sorry. Even that also very difficult. He says, never mind, come down one more level, level number 2, verse number 10. If you can't even practice that worshipping me, never mind, convert all your actions as a worship to me. So we do two type of action as we discuss. One is sakama karma, which is actions done for selfish purposes, and one is nishkama karma, actions done for selfless purposes. So he says, slowly convert all your actions to selfless actions, nishkama karma. How? By dedicating all your actions to me. Accept, how should I do that? Consider yourself as an instrument in the hands of the Lord and carry out all your actions. So you will not be disturbed. Therefore, you convert all your actions into worship. Dedicate all your actions to me. And you say, Lord, I'm sorry, even that also I cannot do. Never mind, come down to level number 1, which is in verse number 11. He says, be selfish, do all your selfish actions. Whatever you get also keep for yourself, don't share with society, doesn't matter. Take care of your family, do selfish actions. Whatever you get, only enjoy it yourself. But minimum what you should do? Be grateful to the Lord for whatever is given you. You don't have to be doing selfless action. You don't have to do dhanam, you don't have to do charity, you don't have to do anything for society. Doesn't matter. At least be thankful to the Lord for whatever He has given you. And thus slowly from that level we must rise to the level 2 and level 3 and level 4 and finally level 5. So it purifies us. Whenever we focus our mind on God, it purifies us and brings us higher on the spiritual path. So that 5 levels of bhakti yoga were clearly explained to us for the important purpose. Why? See, to assess ourselves, which level we are and how do I raise myself to the next level. So this is a very practical chapter. It allows us to assess what type of bhaktas we are, at what level of bhakti we are, and then how can I rise slowly until I reach that ultimate 5th level of bhakti, where I have this knowledge and understand Lord as the unmanifest. So those five levels were explained. Then in the final verses from 13 to 20, Krishna will give us the qualities of a devotee. Many about 30 over qualities of a devotee will give us. Again, very practical chapter, because if I want to know, am I progressing? How do I know, am I progressing on a spiritual path? How do I know whether I'm becoming a better and better devotee of Lord every day? So Krishna says, I will give you all these characteristics of the bhakta. What is the definition of a bhakta? What are the qualities a bhakta should have? I will give you all these qualities, and then you can also use that to assess what qualities you have, what qualities you don't have, so that you can start to cultivate these qualities. And the more and more qualities that you cultivate, means what? You are progressing on the spiritual path. So this again is a very important chapter to self-analyze our progress on the spiritual path. And we discuss some qualities in verse number 13, 14, and then we came to verse number 15. Okay? So all clear up to now? Okay. So now we were halfway through verse number 15. And we were discussing that qualities which were called in the third and fourth line of verse number 15. Muktaha. As you all see the word Muktaha in the fourth line of verse 15. Okay. There are some new students here. You have your Gita books. Yeah, okay. So just try to follow. Okay. Okay, so in verse number 15, the word Muktaha is on the last line. And Muktaha means what? Freedom. Freedom. Okay. It does not mean moksha, it means freedom. So what is the marks of a bhakta, of a devotee of Lord, should have freedom? Freedom from what? And most of the time we think that as long as I am free from my house, I am free from my attachments, that is a bhakta of the Lord. Krishna says no. Because you can give up your possessions, you can give up your family, but you go to the forest, you go to the ashram, yet your mind is still attached to your family, that is not called freedom. So what should one have freedom from? Muktaha. He gives us four qualities which we should be free from. And what are the four qualities? Harsha, Amarsha, Bhaya, and what was that? Harsha, one is Harsha, one is Amarsha, and one is Bhaya, and what is the other one? Yeah, yeah, correct. So there were four qualities. We have not discussed yet these four qualities. The first quality is Harsha. It's all combined. If you see the third line, all the four qualities are there. Harsha is joy. Okay, happiness, joy. Amarsha is the opposite, which means jealousy or what we call disturbance of the mind. Amarsha. Bhaya, as you all know, is fear, bhayam. And the last one is Udvega. Udvega means anxiety. So these four qualities, Krishna says, one should be muktaha, one should be free from these four qualities. Okay, so now let us look at the qualities individually now. So Harsha means joy. And joy here, it does not mean, therefore, some people wrongly conclude, therefore, if you tell a joke to a bhakta, then what will he do? Say, I cannot laugh. I am a bhakta of the Lord. I'm sorry, I cannot laugh. So it does not mean that here. Harsha means over-excitement. A jnani can experience joy. Otherwise, you will have a miserable life. Who wants to become a jnani? Who wants to become a bhakta of the Lord? But here it means over-excitement. Now, what is the difference between joy and over-excitement? That is the question we stopped with last week, right? We said joy is okay, but over-excitement is wrong. So what is the difference between joy and over-excitement? So you all have 1 week to think about it. So now give me some answers. Or you all were so over-excited that you have no time to think about it. So what's the difference between joy and overexcitement?
Joy is at the intellect level.
Excitement?
Is it personal?
Personal, emotional, rajasic. What does it mean to us? The difference between joy and overexcitement. So in overexcitement is when you get carried away and it overpowers your intellect, your reasoning capacity, your thinking capacity, your judgment. That is called overexcitement. You get carried away. And especially that's why they say when you're overexcited, you know what you should never do when you're overexcited? Never give any promises when you're overexcited. It's very, very dangerous because you're suddenly so carried away, so excited, then the wife comes to you, darling, can you buy for me one gold necklace? Oh, sure, no problem. Then after you check your bank balance, why did I say that? See, overexcited. So there's a beautiful story in Mahabharata also, and that teaches us also what one should not get carried away. It's okay to experience joy, but one should always be in control of your discriminatory faculties. And the story given in Mahabharata was when King Santanu, he was so besotted with Ganga and he wanted to marry her. And he was pursuing her, asking her, you know, trying to get her to say yes, to marry him. First she refused and then finally she said, I'll marry you, but there's one condition. You all should know.
No,
this is the first story. The King Santanu met Ganga and he told her, I want to marry you. She said, no, but I'll marry you on one condition. You must not question whatever I do. And he was so happy because she agreed to marry him. He said, okay, no problem. Whatever you do, no problem. I will never question. So that up to today also, we cannot question our wives also, whatever. It started with King Santanu. And then what did she do? When the children were born, one by one she took and threw in the river and killed in the river. First child. And he couldn't ask because why? He gave her a promise. He said, if you question me, I will leave you or get out of your life. So first child she killed, he had to watch in horror, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. Finally, when he came to the eighth child, he couldn't take it. He said, now you have to tell me why you are killing all these children. And of course, then there's a long story behind it. But then she said, now since you have questioned me, I will give you the eighth child and I'm leaving. And she went off. Okay? So it teaches us a lesson that one should think carefully because we are giving a promise for the whole life that I will not question you. And that King Santanu learned a very bitter lesson over his promise. So that is what? To his wife, right? And then Kaike, yes. Same also. Because he was so happy that she saved him or something. She took care of him, right? Yeah. So same thing. So these are all stories that tell us to be very careful. When we get carried away, then we start giving promises which we cannot keep. Overjoy. So any joy we experience, it's okay, but we should always be in control of our discriminative powers also. Okay. So when we get overjoyed, we forget the simple fact that our powers of discrimination get overpowered. And not only that, then when our powers of discrimination get overpowered, we also expect this joyous occasion to last forever and forever. We don't think that this is only temporary. We lose that power of discrimination. And then when we experience sorrow, we get shattered because we are not prepared for it. Thus, a jnani or a bhakta of Lord, he enjoys happiness. He enjoys joyous occasions. Right? So, but he is in full control of his discriminating power. That is Marsha. Amarsha is jealousy or intolerance or envy, okay, which is another big problem on the spiritual path. And that is because we look upon others as different from us. So we are not able to tolerate success in others. And every person we have to understand, again, every quality can be overcome with proper discrimination, with proper thinking, with proper analysis. So what should we understand? That every person will rise and fall according to what? According to their own karmas. There is nothing we can do to affect that person. That person, if he is going to be successful, according to his or her karmas, he will be successful. No matter how envious, how jealous you are, no matter what you try to do to stop his success, it is not going to happen if it is in his karma to be successful. So the law of karma will grant a person success or failure. And everything is granted by who? By the Lord. And it can also be taken away by the Lord also, according to the law of karma. So therefore we should understand that nothing belongs to us. And whatever we should do minimum, if we should not be jealous of other people's success. In fact, if we can bless others, it will also be a blessing for us also. Right? So by cursing others for having more will not change the situation, because that person is going to be successful based on his own karma. So Amarsha is what? Have an attitude of patience and tolerance towards others. Right? Right? We must cultivate this quality of having a loving attitude and patience especially. We don't have patience with others. So there must be patience, there must be tolerance. See, that's why I stopped the class also on time. Because many people looking at their time also very impatient. So Amarsha, learn to practice patience also. And a jnani is one who is muktaha, free from this. Bhaya. Bhaya, you can understand, ordinarily means fear. And here, of course, it's a bit more deeper, because this is insecurity. And this insecurity starts with us and remains with us all the way from birth to death. From womb to tomb, there is this feeling of insecurity. And why do we continuously have this feeling of insecurity? Right from the time we are born till the time we die, we have this feeling of insecurity. What is the reason? Our past vasanas are there also, true. What else? What is it, the causes, the main cause of our insecurity?
You don't know what to get, why you don't know.
Okay, you can't see the future, you don't know what's going to happen, and yet what do you base your security on? External, which is subject to change. So how can you be secure when all the time you're basing your security on something external, be it a person, be it an object, be it a situation? As long as you base your happiness and security on the external, there will always be a feeling of insecurity, because nothing is permanent, it can go at any time. Possessions, relationships, even this body also, right? And there is a saying in our scriptures, the more proud you are of your family lineage, supposing you always say, you know, my great-grandfather did this, my father did this, my family background like this, like that, then what is that insecurity that comes? The more proud you are of your family lineage, what are you always insecure about? Dishonor. Something will happen that people come and point a finger at your family lineage, right? The more proud I am of my beauty, what am I insecure about it? Fear of old age, right? Whatever you're attached to, whatever you're proud of, whatever you base your happiness and security on, don't forget there's always then insecurity will arise. So when I'm proud of my beauty, I fear old age. When I'm proud of my wealth, I fear poverty. One day I might lose my money, somebody might cheat me, or I might make a wrong investment. There's always that fear of poverty also. And when I'm proud of my fame, I always fear what? Loss of that fame or infamy. Because there's always be somebody who will become more popular than me one day. I cannot remain number one forever also. So the more you take the pride in things, the more your happiness and security depends on the external, the more there is bhayam or fear or insecurity of losing it. So that is bhayam. That's why there is a saying, Vairagya Eva Abhayam. What is Bhayam is fear. Abhayam is fearlessness. Can only come when there is Vairagya, when there is detachment. When we learn to detach, that means what? Do not make our happiness and security dependent on external factors. The more and more we detach and we do not depend on external factors for our happiness, we search for happiness within, we search for happiness from God, we will never be disappointed. So, bhayam can only come with attachment also. And a jnani is one who is free from fear because he is free from dependence on external factors. Okay? And this detachment must not come out of disgust or out of force. It has to come with proper understanding that the world cannot give me permanent happiness. The world can give me some security, the world can give me some happiness, but it can never, never give me permanent happiness. With that understanding, we reduce our dependence on the external world. Udvega, the last quality, anxiety. Anxiety, which is also mental disturbance. All types of anxiety is caused by all types of disturbance about the constantly thinking about the past and the future. And Swami Chinmayananda says, one should stop thinking about the dead past, which is already gone, and the unborn future, which has not come yet. We keep on worrying about this and that which has not happened. So that is where our anxiety builds up. So the mind is never in the present. But he says the jnani or the bhakta of Lord is one who is muktaha from all these four qualities, and therefore sacha me priyaha. Saha, meaning such a devotee who has all these qualities, is priyaha, is very, very dear to me. Is very loving, and God finds him very loving, is very loving to the Lord. And why? Because this bhakta has switched from world dependence to God dependence, and eventually from God dependence you switch to self dependence. That is the journey of the bhakta. Okay. Verse 16. More qualities of the bhakta are given here. First quality given there in verse 16 is anapeksha. Anapeksha means indifferent to desires. One who is not emotionally dependent on the fulfillment of desires to be happy. So there are no expectations. You can have desires. There is nothing that says you cannot have desires, but you should not be dependent on the fulfillment of the desires for your happiness. If it happens, it's okay. If it does not happen also, it is okay. If things come to you unsought, accept them, enjoy them. And if they go away, don't get disturbed by them also. So one who is free from all, see the difference with desires and binding desires. There's two things. One is having desires, that is okay, because when you have the desire, it happens or doesn't happen, it doesn't affect you. The other dangerous one is binding desires. When you have the desire and it does not happen and it disturbs you, that is what is to be watched. So be very careful from binding desires. Have expectations, have desires, but understand again the law of karma will also operate. Whatever you get also is dependent on the law of karma. Whatever you get or don't get is also dependent on the law of karma, and one should accept that. That's why in chapter 18 also Krishna will say that all our actions and results depend on five factors. It depends on the person doing the action. It depends on the knowledge you have that which you are equipped with that you are doing the action. It also depends on the environment. For example, a doctor is operating. So number one, it depends on how skilled is the doctor to determine the outcome of the operation. Number two, the doctor may be very skilled, but the equipment could be faulty. So the operation can be a success or a failure. Number three, the support staff, the nurses, etc. also, they might not do a right job. And number four, the patient's prarabdha karma also maybe is time for him to go. So even the doctor can be skilled, you can have the best hospital, everything, but if the patient's prarabdha karma is over, you also cannot do anything. So we can contribute, but we are not 100%, we cannot 100% determine the outcome of the action. We can be perfect in doing the action, but prarabdha karma also will play its role also. So that's another quality, anapeksha, to be indifferent to the desires. Do not have binding desires. Suchi, you can understand purity. And when we talk about purity, we are talking about internal and external purity. So external purity means the clothes you wear should keep them clean. The environments that you live in, that you work in, keep it clean. That is external purity. Internal purity is, what is internal purity? Cultivate what you call good thoughts, loving thoughts, thoughts of compassion and love. So try to avoid what we call thoughts of anger or thoughts of jealousy or pride or ego. So always try to cultivate. And the best way, of course, when thoughts of anger or ego or jealousy come into you, what should you do? Opposite. You always divert the mind. It is difficult to suppress the mind, but you can easily divert the mind. So divert the mind through your prayers, through chanting your mantras, through thoughts about God. You try to divert the mind. In that way, slowly you change the nature of your mind. Because it has been proven also, if you expose a child to violence, you know, make him sit in front of a TV, just show him violent programs, 10-15 years you keep showing violent programs, what happens? He develops into a violent character. So what does it tell us? What we practice, that's what eventually happens. But if we push our mind away to divinity, to divine things, chanting mantras, etc., slowly we can dilute away these wrong thoughts of what we call adharmic thoughts also. So that is what we call suchi, to practice internal and external cleanliness. Then the next quality is daksha. Daksha means dexterous. Dexterous means ability to respond to various situations in life correctly. Is efficient in all situations. Does not let any event destroy him, but acts to uplift himself or herself out of any situation. Now, generally, if we look at it, a person can respond with two extremes. Okay? When we face a situation in life, we have two extremes to respond, extremes I'm talking about. One extreme is called impulsive reaction. We face a situation, what is impulsive reaction? What do you mean by impulsive reaction? Without using the powers of the discrimination, without using the buddhi or the intellect, we just react. Now people call you donkey, you call them monkey. Right? Instant reaction, you don't think carefully. Right? Why do you, if he calls you donkey, why do you have to call him a monkey? So that's called what we call instant reaction, okay? Without even thinking. Impulsive reaction. And what happens with impulsive reaction? You will never solve the situation with an impulsive reaction. He calls you donkey, you call monkey, he calls you cockroach, you call him elephant, and it goes on and on and on. It is never going to solve the situation. So you have to stop. That means if you carry on, imagine you provoke that fellow, he keeps on shouting something, you get more provoked, you go on and on and on. Right? So you have to use your discriminating power. Just because he's calling you donkey doesn't mean you suddenly have a tail. You don't turn around and look, do I have a tail? That's why he's calling me donkey. Right? So that is one extreme. Impulsive reaction. What is the other extreme? One is
too slow.
Become what? Depressed. What? Violence. Okay. The other extreme is that we allow the situation to happen. See, somebody hits you, doesn't mean you say, I'm Gyani, I cannot hit back. No, I cannot. So the other is allowing yourself to put up with those problems. Somebody abuses you physically, verbally, etc. Right? Somebody exploits you also in the name of goodness. So in the name of goodness and compassion, our scriptures never say you must be a victim of injustice. That's very important to understand. Just like when the Pandavas also were victimized by the Kauravas, first what did Krishna say? Go and negotiate. Try to reach a compromise. You cannot reach a compromise, then what do? You say, never mind, it's okay, take my kingdom, take everything, you know. No, then you have to take the appropriate action. So one extreme is what? Impulsive action. The other extreme is what? Inaction, not doing anything at all. Right? That is the extreme response. So you become a doormat for person to step on you always. Right? One is you become a doormat, the other is you punch a person in the nose. Extreme. Both are extremes. Okay? Now, so what is required then? What is required then? Take the appropriate reaction. Take the right action. How? By using the powers of discrimination. Right? Whatever is necessary, that appropriate action to be given, take that action. If it requires you to protect yourself, by all means protect yourself. Right? So we should not respond impulsively, yet we should not allow ourselves to be victimized. So Daksha is a jnani who is guided by his intellect to take the appropriate action in all situations. And when we say that, it means you are not influenced by your raga dvesha. Very important. Raga dvesha influences to act. So our likes and dislikes force us to act. We should not act on raga dvesha, we should act on our intellect, the buddhi itself. That is called daksha. Udasina. Udasina means impartial. One who does not take sides due to favoritism. Just because you like somebody, you support him, whether he is right or wrong, you support him. So you are impartial. You judge the situation. If that person you like also, but he is doing wrong, yet you have to tell him that he is wrong. So when two sides are arguing, we don't take sides based on favoritism. That is called Udasina, impartial. Okay? Gatavyata. Gatavyata is one who is free from pain, free from sorrow, whatever be the experiences of life, because you must understand that every experience in life is determined by three factors. One, in our scriptures, the three factors are given as desa, the place where we are, kala, the time factor also, and the third is prarabdha. So desa, kala, prarabdha are the three factors which are sometimes beyond our control. Like sometimes you are born in a family of poverty, that is called desa, the place where you are born. There are factors which you are born in, it is out of, it doesn't mean that you cannot rise out of poverty, but that is the situation you are born in. So you experience these things because of your desa, kala. Similarly, when we say desa and kala, it might be cold sometimes, extremely cold, it might be extremely hot, and that's why they talk about these sannyasis who can, when they renounce everything, they go out into the world, into the forest and all that, they can accept all these kinds of situations. So whether it is hot, whether it is cold, whether they have food to eat, whether they have no food to eat, it does not disturb their mental situation. So due to desa kala, a jnani is never affected. And again, there will be favorable situations, there will be unfavorable situations in life which are beyond our control. So develop a healthy attitude towards all favorable and unfavorable situations in life. And how? What should be the attitude? That again, we must remember this very important point. All the experiences I am receiving are for what purpose? For my spiritual growth. That is what we must keep on remembering, that every experience in life I am receiving is for my spiritual growth. And different people require different experiences for their spiritual growth, because everybody is different, right? So every experience is chosen for each individual how to grow spiritually. So we try to learn from the experience rather than only looking at the negative aspect of every experience. Next quality, the third line, sarva arambha parityagi. Sarva means all. Arambha is meaning binding actions. Parityagi means one who has renounced all binding actions. Now the question here is, what are binding actions? So arambha means binding actions. Parityagi means to renounce all types of binding actions. Now what do we mean by binding actions? Okay? Binding action is any action you do with the thought that once this action is completed, my life will be fulfilled, my life will be complete.
Self-interest.
Huh? Yeah, it's for self-interest, but before we even start the action, our attitude of doing this action is, once I can successfully do this action, the result will be my life will be complete. My life will be totally happy, right? And thus, you are doing the action for only one purpose. That is for what? The scriptures say, for the sake of purnatvam, for fulfillness, for total satisfaction. Now, when you do any karma, therefore, with this attitude, it becomes a binding karma. That means before you start the action, you already expect this action to end, to result in a success which will bring you what we call ultimate happiness.
So, is that is in between the action and the
result? Right. Your expectation there that when this result is over, when I get the result, I will be extremely happy from this action. Okay. So, now the question is, why cannot any action give you purnatvam? When you do any karma, it becomes a binding karma if you have this expectation, but no karma can give you purnatvam. That is what we have to understand. From the very beginning, any action we do can never give you ultimate fulfillment. And why is that? True is not in your hand, but what else? Worry will be there because you are expecting something. But always understand one thing, that every action is finite or infinite?
Finite.
When we do a particular number of prayers, supposing you do this number of prayers, the action is finite. So result is finite or infinite? Finite, right? So finite plus finite equals?
Finite.
Action is finite. So, okay. Let's say this way. Let's say the scriptures tell you, if you go and chant Vishnu Sahasranama 1,000 times a day for 10 years, you will get some You will get Swargaloka. Okay. So you chant for 10 years. How many years do you think you will get in Swargaloka? Maybe 10 years you will get, okay? Because why? You chant for 10 years, you will get back 10 years, right? So action is finite, because it's limited, result is finite. Finite plus finite equals finite. It cannot be infinite. Whatever action we do is finite, is limited by time and space. Therefore, result also is going, you're going to get the result, but it is also finite, right? If you work for 8 hours a day, let's say you're paid on hourly wages, you work for 8 hours, how many hours paid do you expect?
8 hours
you'll get. Because why? Your action is finite, your result is finite. You cannot say, I work for 8 hours, I want 16 hours paid, right? So understand this, every action we do is finite. every result is going to be finite, that means it will last for a certain time. How can you ever get purnatvam from your action? You cannot get total fulfillment, right? If you eat two plates of rice, you are full. How long are you full? Maybe 2 hours, maybe 3 hours, maybe 4 hours. After that, what happens? You are hungry again. So eating is finite, result is also finite. So we have to understand that we undertake any action with the attitude of fulfillment will never bring total fulfillment. So what happens now? Because of this, you are caught in an endless web of action. Action, result, I am not happy. Action, result, I am not happy. Then, action, result, and I am not happy again. And we all know this, how? That action has never led to our total happiness. How do we know this? Because up to today we are still searching for that elusive happiness. Whatever we have done from childhood up to now, we still say what? I am not happy. I am still searching for that elusive happiness. So many actions we have done, right? We have gone to temple, we have gone pilgrimages, we have done dhanam, we have done seva, but we all come back to the same thing. I am still not happy. Right? So a jnani knows this fact and does not commit any action for fulfillment. So we have to understand, therefore, we are all acting to search happiness.
Yeah.
Right? We are all acting for one purpose only. And one purpose alone is to search happiness, to get happiness. Nobody does action for unhappiness. So what does the jnani work out of? If he is not doing action for happiness, what is it that motivates his action? He's already happy. He works out of happiness. Whereas all of us are working for happiness. But a jnani works out of fulfillment. That love for God, that compassion for everybody is already in him. So he's working out of happiness. He's working out of love for God. There is already happiness. He does not have to seek happiness through his actions. That is called purnatvam, and that is what we call this quality a sarva aramba parityagi. One who has renounced actions leading to fulfillment. Doesn't need that fulfillment. Okay? Purnatvam is a way of life. And Krishna concludes also there in verse 16, yaha, who is such a person who has all his qualities, is a mad bhakta, is my devotee. Who has. So you can see that the definition for a devotee of Lord is not just going to temple and offering flowers and breaking coconuts and all that. What kind of definition is given us? Totally different definitions. These are the qualities of a bhakta, Krishna says. Such a devotee is a mad bhakta, is my devotee. And sa me priya, he is very, very dear to me also. Okay. Verse number 17, one who is free from emotional reactions to all kinds of situations. Okay, so here he describes in verse number 17, one who is not overpowered by hrishyati. Hrishyati means elation. One who is not carried away by hrishyati or elation. And at the same time, one who is not sochati, one who does not go into depression, lamentation. So when favorable situations come, we don't get overexcited. There's nothing wrong, as we said earlier, to enjoy. And when unfavorable situations come, don't get extremely disturbed, distressed or troubled also. So a jnani bhakta knows how to experience joy. He also experiences sorrow. It is not that you become a jnani, you don't experience sorrow. But again, what is the quality? The sorrow should not overpower you. It should not overpower you. And in chapter 2, if you look at one very, very important line, right in verse number 1, this whole description of describing Arjuna's condition on the battlefield, Sanjay is describing it in chapter 2, verse number 1. If you look at page 24, verse 1, second line, Sanjaya is speaking this. Huh? He is describing Arjuna's condition on the battlefield. In chapter 1, we saw Arjuna lay down his bow and arrow. He told Krishna, I will not fight. And now Sanjaya is describing his condition. What he says, Ashru Purna Kulekshanam. So there are four words there. Ashru is tears. Purna means full. Purnam, no? Purna, full. What is full of tears? Ikshanam. Arjuna's eyes were bursting with tears. Like a baby, he was crying. Okay? So, Ashru Purna Ikshanam is the physical representation of Arjuna's condition on the battlefield. He is sitting there crying away like a baby. Eyes are full of tears. What is the result? Akula. Akula means so many tears are bursting in his eyes that his vision is blur. Right? When we are crying like that, even our vision becomes blur. Now that is the external representation of what we see in Arjuna. But what does it represent? If you see somebody sitting there and crying, what does it represent actually?
Sorrow.
Where is the sorrow being experienced?
In the mind.
It represents the state of the mind. The crying is only an external manifestation of the state of the mind. If you see a person smiling, what does it tell you about the state of his mind? Happy, right? So our outward expression only reflects the state of the mind. Now what do these words again tell us very interestingly? When tears flood our eyes, our vision gets blurred. Now how do you relate it to the mind? When sorrow overpowers the mind gets blurred, means what? Not able to think properly. That was Arjuna's problem. That depression, that sorrow had reached such an extent that he was unable to think clearly. He came to the battlefield, he knew exactly what to do. He was prepared for the battle. 12 years he was burning in the forest waiting for his chance to come and kill all the Kauravas. He came to the battlefield. Before he came to the battlefield, what did he do? He went to see Krishna. Right? He went to see Krishna. Can you be my charioteer? Means what? He was ready for battle. When the Kauravas blew their conches in chapter 1, what did Arjuna do? He also blew his conches. Which means what? I am also ready for battle. Then what did he tell Krishna? Take my chariot to the middle of the battlefield because I want to see who I have to fight. Which means what? He was ready for battle. But then something happened, as we all discussed in chapter 1, that totally overpowered him. That brought him down to this depression. Depression meaning what? That sorrow overwhelmed him until he was unable to think. But Arjuna did one very wise thing. Froze. That's not wise. He surrendered to Lord Krishna. Chapter 2, verse 7. Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava. I am your disciple. What was Arjuna-Krishna relationship before? No. You are my charioteer. You take instructions from me. I am the master of the chariot. Then what did Arjuna say? Now you are my master. You are my guru. I am your disciple. I surrender to you. Now you tell me what to do. Right? So, we have to be very careful. Sorrow we can experience, but that sorrow that does not take away our capacity to think, then we don't know in what direction to go. We don't know what to do, how to get out of this sorrow. Arjuna was fortunate, he had Lord Krishna. So, we have to be very careful. Like that, when sorrow overpowers us, we are unable to think clearly how to get out of this situation. So, that is the other quality here in chapter 12. Yona rishati na dvesti. Okay, so one who does not get carried away when rejoicing, one who does not go into extreme depression, rishati and sochati. Okay, that they cloud his discriminating powers. That's why Shankara also wrote a beautiful text called Viveka Chudamani. Viveka means what? That intellect. Chudamani means the crown jewel of humanity is what? The only thing we have is our intellect. If that power of discrimination is overpowered, then we become what? No different than an animal, because an animal does not have that power of discrimination. So that's why you call it Viveka Chudamani, right? And we also saw in Ramayan, when Lord Dasarath was ordered Lord Rama to be exiled in the forest. At that point, when King Dasarath ordered Lord Rama to be exiled in the forest, before that, just hours before, what did he tell Rama? Tomorrow you are going to be crowned king of Ayodhya. Few hours later he called Rama, now I have some good news and some bad news. So what the good news was, you were going to be crowned king of Ayodhya. Bad news, now you are going to be sent into exile 12 years. Now imagine somebody like that facing a situation. Hours ago I was told I am going to be king of Ayodhya. Now you are telling me 12 years go and stay in the forest. What would happen to such a person? So Lakshman, when he heard that, he was so angry, he cursed his father. He got so physically abusive with his father. He lost all his powers of discrimination. But what did Lord Rama say? He was the most affected. Nobody else was affected. It was only Rama who was supposed to go into exile. Yet Lakshman got angry. Everybody got disturbed. But Lord Rama stood firm. He said what? He said, what a wonderful opportunity. For 12 years, I will get to meet all the sages and saints in the forest and I will learn knowledge at their feet. So he looked upon it as a wonderful opportunity. He did not look at losing the kingdom of Ayodhya. Instead, he looked at that 12 years when I'm in exile, I'll have that full opportunity to visit all the ashrams, visit all the sages and saints and gain knowledge from them. So the power of discrimination was not taken away, right? And that's why Lord Rama also understood, and he mentions that in the Ramayana. He says, this is all the play of Prarabdha. I accept it and I follow it. It's a play of Prarabdha. So we must always have that inner control. And what are the other quality? Na dvesti na kankshati. Na dvesti means one who has freedom from, dvesti is dvesha, kankshati is raga. So one who has freedom from raga dvesha. Okay? So raga, kamshati means raga, it's the same meaning. Means one who is always hankering for favorable situations. You always want everything to go your way. I come for Gita class, I don't want anybody to sit on my chair. Somebody sitting on my chair, what happens? Immediately, you know, so. That you want everything to go your way. You only desire favorable situations. And dvesha or dveshti means you do not want any unfavorable situations in your life. Right? So Jnani Bhakta does all his responsibilities, does all his duties without any expectation of favorable or unfavorable situation. He is able to receive both equally. Okay? Then, the other quality is, in the third line, Shubh, Ashubha, Parityagi. There are two words there, Shubh, which means good, Ashubha means evil, Parityagi, who has renounced both Shubh and Ashubh. So one who has renounced Punyam and Papam. Now, we can, Punyam and Papam, according to Vedanta, both Punyam and Papam are considered to be what we call bondage. Now why is Punyam also bondage? Because if the more actions that we do with the thought that I am doing all these great deeds, I am doing all these good actions, the thought is I am doing this good action, it becomes a bondage in the sense what? You will get all the rewards. You will get the merit. You will get the punyam. You do good actions with the thought that I am doing so great actions, I am doing so many good things. That is what creates the bondage. So that means what? When you do the action, you will get the result. Either you get the result here in earth, where you get so much name, fame, etc. Or you go to Swargaloka. So that is punyam. But what happens again? You have to come back again. So it is a form of bondage which keeps you tied up in repeated births and deaths. And papam also, when we do, it takes us to Naraka Loka, the lower Loka. So whichever way we look at it, punyam or papam both keeps us in bondage. So when we say a jnani bhakta has renounced doing any actions for the sake of punyam and papam, means what? That doership is renounced. He doesn't think that whatever I am doing, I am the doer. So that means one who has surrendered all actions to the Lord. So neither does punyam is there, neither is there papam also, because we have surrendered everything to the Lord. So that is a jnani bhakta. He does punya karmas. Why does he do punya karmas therefore? If motive is not that I am doing punya karmas for my benefit, what is the motive of doing all the punya karmas then? For good of the world, which will result in what? There will be a result. What is the result? Chitta Shuddhi, self-purification. So all actions are done for punyam for the purpose of internal purification, for Chitta Shuddhi. Okay? Not for attaining Swarga Loka or for any other enjoyments. And Krishna says, Yaha Bhakta, such is a Bhaktiman, such is a devotee of mine who is very priya, who is very dear. Every verse ends with the same declaration by Lord. Such a devotee is very dear to me. Verse number 18.
Okay. Now, if you do an action, then you get the results. But if you do good action, you get a good result.
Hmm.
So when you're
intention. No, depends on the motive.
Yeah, depends on the motive. So that was where I was.
Yeah. So if your motive is to get the results for your action, then you will get, which means either fame, name here or Swarga Loka. But if you are totally detached, you do good action, then there is no accumulative karma. So that means there is no punyam accumulated, which means there is only moksha only moksha. Right? So we have to break out of this bondage of punyam and papam. And the only way is not the action we are doing, it is the motive that guides our action. We must be always very aware of this. Verse 18. Samaha. Samaha, equal minded, in what? Shatru. Shatru means one who is an enemy. And Mitra, one who is a friend. Attitude should be Samaha. Now in the first place, a jnani does not look upon any person as an enemy. To a jnani, all people are the same, right? But it is the problem is the other people look upon you as an enemy. They hate you for some reason. You may not hate that person. You may give love to that person, but for some reason that person may look upon you as an enemy also and try to harm you. So what is the response or action if anybody also tries to harm you? Right? You look upon them as same. And we've discussed this last week because somebody did ask a question that what happens if somebody is trying to do something harmful to you? Then how do I look upon him not as my enemy? We address the action, but we don't send hatred to the person. So the idea is to learn to separate the sin from the sinner. To the sin, give the appropriate action. To the sinner, send out your love. And never at any time should we send out hatred to that person who's trying to do anything. We protect ourselves from that, but we do it out of love also. So samaha is, a jnani sees no difference between an enemy or friend because he has samadva. Samadva means he does not hate and he does not divide society into whom he hates and whom he loves. And as we said earlier, it does not mean a jnani will put up with criticism, but he will give the appropriate reaction also. Okay? And what else he says? Tatha means also, these are the other qualities. Mana apamana. Mana means honor. Apamana means dishonor. In that condition also he is samaha. So as long as, you see, this honor and dishonor also, you have to understand, As long as you're an ordinary person, honor and dishonor mean nothing to us, because nobody really cares about us. So when really honor and dishonor mean something? Right, we are ordinary people. Who wants to come and honor us and all that? We have no trouble with honor and dishonor. Who has problem with honor and dishonor? Huh? All the important people, then the VIP only have problem with honor and dishonor. What honor and dishonor we worry about? Nothing to honor and dishonor us. So, the more higher up you go, the more popular you become, the more famous you become, the more there is a question of honor and dishonor, mana and apamana. So, there is always a greater possibility. So, anybody is free to garland you, and tomorrow the very same person can throw a shoe at you also. Right? It can happen. Right? So, if leave us alone, leave human beings alone. What about Rama, Krishna? What kind of honor and dishonor they had to face? Rama also faced it. Krishna also had so many enemies who tried to destroy him, tried to kill him, insulted him. The very famous story of Shishupal, very interesting story, quite a long story, but I'm sure all of you have read it. So all of these great sages and saints also had to face honor and dishonor. And we have to understand one thing, that honor and dishonor do not lie in our hands. They lie in the hands of other people. We can't do anything about it. Today somebody wants to honor you, okay. Tomorrow that same person dishonors you, also okay. Why? Because that action does not lie in your hand. So what can you do?
Accept.
Be mentally prepared to handle both honor and dishonor. That is what we call samatvam. Don't get carried away when people honor you. At the same time, don't get dejected when people dishonor you. Maintain that stability of the mind. Not to feel dejected. A jnani bhakta knows how to handle honor and dishonor. That's why it is very important when people honor you, not to feel proud. There will be people who come and thank you, there will be people who come and honor you for what you did, maybe some seva you did, some dhanam you did. So what should we do when we are honored? You can't stop people from honoring you, so what should we do? Dedicate that to the Lord. Thank the Lord for giving, for making you an instrument to do seva to others or to give dhanam to others. So always consider yourself as an instrument, never as a doer. And that's why when that feeling of honor is not there, later when you are dishonored, that is so better dedicate to Lord. I'm just joking. So we don't, because the more you feel honored, the more the chance for dishonor also. Okay? So don't feel dejected. And what else?
What about this action itself?
The what?
The action, the act of honoring people. Say I want to honor 50 people, 100 people. Bring them to the temple and give them an honor and all that. Is that a good action or is that
Yeah, your intention is good to honor people. It's only that they who are being honored must not get carried away. So they expect this every time. The next time you don't do it, they complain to you. Why last week you took me to temple, honored me, this week why you didn't take me? So that, as I said, the honor and honor, dishonoring, we can't stop people. But we have to handle our mental or emotional response to that honor and dishonor. But we give honor to people, it's good, it's important. So at least we also encourage people to do more and more good deeds also. There's nothing wrong.
When you honor the person says thank you.
Right.
So what does he say? When he says thank you, but he's...
So isn't that an expression of humility? I'm thanking you for honoring me, but mentally I always consider myself as an instrument. Right? Because you don't thank people, then they think you are arrogant someone. Honor you someone, you don't come and thank me someone. So you thank them, but mentally attitude is dedicated to the Lord. Okay, then here again four pairs of opposites mentioned in line number 3. Sita, Usna, Sukha, Dukha. Sita means cold. Okay? Usna means heat or hot or heat. Sukham, you can understand, favorable. Dukham, unfavorable. So there are four pairs of opposites which we all face in life. Now what is the difference between Sita, Usna and Sukha, Dukha? Why are there four pairs of opposites presented? Which is at the physical level? Heat and cold are at the physical level. We face these extremes in life. Sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold. Sukha Dukha is experienced at mental, or what we call mental level, right? At the mind level. So there are physical favorable and unfavorable situations we face. There are also unfavorable and favorable situations faced at the mental level. So that's why four pairs of opposites are given. And what is the response here? Samaha. The word Samaha has got to be applied to all these experiences. Okay. Samaha, equal at mental and physical level. And that's why again, whatever we face, we only have to try to understand it intellectually. Right? That what is the definition of life? If you ask anybody, define your life, what will that person tell you? It's a series of experiences that involve happiness and sorrow, health and ill health, cold and heat. Therefore, all these are called dvandva or pairs of opposites. Can anybody escape? Can anybody here put up a hand and say, my whole life has been nothing but happiness? That person we call the greatest liar, isn't it? Or a person cannot say, my whole life has been nothing but unhappiness, also cannot. Because we have had sorrow, we have had also happiness also. So dvandva means understanding this important fact that nobody can escape. So knowing that you cannot escape, what have you got to do? Situations are external. How you handle it is internal. So you always have to learn to prepare yourself from these pairs of opposites, whatever comes and goes, even minded. Not to be carried away. And the only way you can do it is two ways. To prepare yourself, what are the two ways? Either you gain knowledge, jnanam, or or bhakti. Either you have bhakti, pure devotion for the Lord, that means you use the bhakti as your shock absorber, or you use jnanam as your shock absorber. As I've explained before, if the car has got to go through a bumpy road, you have no choice but to take the road. What do? You put a very good shock absorber in the car. So what is our shock absorber in life? Either total devotion or bhakti to Lord, or understanding all our experiences through jnana. So let bhakti and jnana be your shock absorber. And a jnani is one who has got both the shock absorbers. He's got jnana and he's got bhakti also. Then the other quality is Sangha Vivarjita. So Varjita is one who is free from, who is won over. What? Sangha. Sangha, you can understand, is attachment. One who has overcome attachment to everything external. So again, if we go back and look at chapter 2 verse 59. Which is on page 51. How do we overcome our attachment to all the objects there? Krishna has given us some clue there in chapter 2 verse 59. He says, sense objects, meaning whatever we experience in life, okay, those are called sense objects, okay, sees for him who does not enjoy them with his senses. Meaning that we can move away from things. Let's say, again, I know you get angry with me every time I give example of ice cream. So let's say the ice cream shop is there. So you see this ice cream now. Suddenly that desire comes, you want to have that ice cream. So how do you prevent yourself? You know, yesterday you had too many ice cream, so today better avoid. So what do? You walk away. You divert your senses away. So he says here, sense objects sees for him who does not enjoy with his senses. So you can walk away from that. But what's the problem? He says, so what does he say? The taste for them persists where? In your mind. So you can walk away from that. What is attractive to you, you can walk away. But then the thought is still lingering in your mind. You know, ice cream, ice cream, ice cream goes on. And you're walking away. So what should you do? He says, this relish, the taste in your mind, also disappears in the case of the man of stable mind when he sees the Supreme. Meaning what? when we change the direction of our thoughts. As we discussed earlier, the pattern of that vasanas, that thought is already in us now. How do we dilute that thought? Suppressing is dangerous because it will keep on popping back in your mind again. Giving it to, into it also is dangerous because that means you lead an indisciplined life. So what can you do? Divert your mind away. So that's what he means. The relish also disappears in the case of the man of stable mind when he sees the Supreme, means when he directs his thoughts away to divinity, to God. So the only thing we can do with our mind is divert the thoughts. So here he says also, Sangha Vibharjita, one who is free from this attachment, free from all this attachment, one who has turned his mind away to divine, towards the divine, towards divine thoughts. Again, there are so many sadhanas we have, chanting of mantras, singing of bhajans, going to temples, meditation, there are so many ways we can use to slowly dilute the wrong thoughts away from our mind. Okay? And the one who has found this inner purnatvam, the mind will never be disturbed. Verse number 19. Verse number 19. Ninda. The word ninda means one who speaks about faults or criticism. Okay? Stutihi means you speak about good qualities. So, speaking about good qualities at physical level, you talk about good qualities of a person. And ninda means speaking about bad qualities of a person. So sometimes again, ninda, stuti are those which we always face. Sometimes people praise our good qualities, sometimes people highlight our bad qualities again. They criticize us, okay? And you know the beauty about speaking about good qualities and bad qualities. Why do people like to speak about other people's good qualities or even bad qualities? Why is it so easily people praise and criticize people? Whatever you do, there will always be people who want to criticize you, isn't it? Why?
Jealous.
What else? It is totally free. Does not involve any expenditure. Right. It does not involve any expenditure. You want to criticize anybody, totally free of charge. Go ahead and criticize. Maximum you can criticize. It's not going to cost you any money. So, a jnani bhakta is one who is able to receive praise, at the same time is able to receive praise without getting carried away. And again, receive criticism without feeling dejected. So, accepting both with a equal mind. Right? Then the last the quality puts there, santushta, yena kena chit. Santushta, yena kena chit means whatever he receives in life. Whatever he gets, he is santushta, he is ever content. And why is he ever content? Again, a jnani, a bhakta, it does not mean that you are ever content means you are not going to work. Yes, you are going to work, you are going to put in your effort. But whatever you receive, you are ever content. Why is it you are ever content? Huh? You look upon everything as Ishvara Prasadam and you understand that everything that you get in life or you don't get is due to your prarabdham karma. You are not going to get more, you are not going to get less. Whatever you are going to get in life, you will get. So be satisfied, be content. Do your duty, put in your efforts, whatever maximum efforts, but be content with whatever you get. Okay? And when we say also, because there is less raga dvesha, the least likes and dislikes you have, then you can be content with anything. The more likes and dislikes you cultivate, then everything is an opportunity to disturb the state of your mind. So, jnani is one who has the least amount of raga dvesha. Give me coffee, okay. You give me tea, okay. Don't have coffee, don't have tea, give me Milo, okay. But if you have a strong raga for coffee, then you come here and the person says, I have no coffee, then what happens? So the more raga dvesha we cultivate, the more opportunities we are giving to the world to disturb us. That's what we have to understand. You are empowering the world to disturb you, the more raga dveshas you have. So, a sannyasi or a jnani is one who is santushta. He is content with whatever he obtains in life. Okay? And that's why, you see, the ultimate sannyas is what? When you go to a person's house and you are supposed to beg for food. Right? So what do the, you know, there's a saying, all the sannyasis are supposed to go, stand in front of the person's house and say, Bhavati Bhiksha Dehi. Bhavati Bhiksha Dehi. They don't say Bhavati Dosa Dehi or Bhavati Puri Dehi. What they say? Bhavati Bhiksha Dehi. That means what? Whatever you put there, I accept. That is Santushta. Right? So Bhavati Bhiksha Dehi. Whatever you put, I take it as prasadam. Aniketa, homeless, without a fixed home. So here does not mean that tomorrow you have to leave your house and go away.
What does that mean?
Huh? What does that mean? Attitude of attachment to your place of dwelling. Not give up your place of dwelling, but don't have unnecessary attachment. So, how not to have unnecessary attachment to your place of dwelling? What should the attitude be? I am dwelling in the house of the Lord. The Lord has blessed me with His house. That is His house. So have that feeling of detachment to your house. And at a higher level, of course, sannyas, when we take sannyas also, it means that wherever we are given a place to stay, we are comfortable with it. Whether you sleep on the forest floor, whether you sleep in a palace tomorrow, next day you are sleeping in the cave, it has no difference to you. That is at a higher level of sannyas also. Okay, I'll just finish up. No time is up, but I think we can just finish up these few verses. Sthiramatir. Sthiramatir, steady-minded. So all these qualities which Krishna has given is only possible when our mind is steady. Now what do we mean by mind is steady? The mind has got mental strength. How has the mind got mental strength? From the Lord. So one who derives his strength from spirituality, one who derives his strength from the Lord is called Sthiramatir. And he has got that conviction to face all the trials and tribulations in the world. That is a short work of Adi Sankaracharya, very short work. It's called Yati Panchakam. Yati Panchakam, Yati is one who has realized the self, one who has got Atma Jnana. So, thus he has renounced both external and internal. He's got renunciation for both external and internal. That is called a Yati. So Panchakam are five verses composed by Adi Shankaracharya on the qualities of a Yati. And in every verse, he gives all the qualities, but every verse ends with one line. It says, Kaupina Vantaha Kalu Bhagya Vantaha. Bhagya Vantaha, blessed are those people who wear the Kaupina. Kaupina is the loincloth. So the one who is a totally realized, like Ramakrishna, he was just wearing a loincloth. Was it Ramakrishna? Ramana Maharishi just used to wear a loincloth. So these are the very highly realized soul. They are very happy just even wearing a loincloth. So blessed are those. And in verse 2, he gives some of the qualities of a Yati. He says, a Yati is one who resorts to the foot of the tree. That means he only rests and sleeps where there is a tree, he takes shelter there. So he is able to sleep anywhere. So that is Aniketa, homeless. Anywhere he can consider his home. He uses his two hands as a bowl for food. Meaning he only begs whatever he receives with his two hands he eats. Whereas for us we want to eat as much as we can. But he only eats what he collects with his two hands also. And thus he says, blessed are those who are happy like that, living with whatever little food they get. They can sleep anywhere. They can accept anything as their food. So that is a jnani who is sthiramatir. Sthita prajna. In chapter 2, if you recall, Lord Krishna calls such a person as a sthita prajna. Okay? So such a person, bhaktiman me priyo naraha. Naraha, such a person is my devotee, bhaktiman, and he is very dear to me. Now in the final verse, to attain all these 30 over qualities to us may seem like a very impossible or very difficult task. You know, so many long list qualities, there are 30 qualities. So here, Krishna wants to assure us that at least you must have some basic qualification. If you have this basic qualification, then all the 30 qualities will come very easily to you. So what are these? He says, Idam Paryupasate, the 5 levels of bhakti that he explained to us, one must have a strong desire to go through all these levels of bhakti. That is very important. If I have a strong commitment to go through with dedication, with commitment through all these 5 levels of bhakti, that is the first quality which is very, very important. So one must have a desire to aspire for the highest goal in life. Adi Shankaracharya calls it mumukshutvam, a very important quality. There must be a desire for moksha, a strong, intense desire for moksha. Then only you will try to cultivate. Otherwise, who is interested in these qualities? Only a serious spiritual person is interested. So first he says, Idam Paryupasate Yada Uptam, which I have spoken about, the 5 levels of bhakti yoga, a person is desirous to attain all these 5 levels or to go through all these 5 levels. Okay? And this is Dharmyam Amritam. These 5 levels would lead one person, if you go through all and you reach the highest level, here Krishna gives us a promise, it is a Dharmyam, it is a virtuous path. It is according to the law of Dharma if you go through all these 5 paths. And it is Amritam, it will lead you to Nectar. What is Nectar? Nectar is immortality or moksha. So the path is Dharma, it is according to the law of Dharma, and it will lead you eventually to moksha. But another important quality you must have is Shraddhadana. You must be endowed with faith. Faith is very, very important on this path. Faith in what? Shankaracharya defines Shraddha as faith in God, faith in Guru, faith in scriptures, and faith in yourself. These are 4 very important things. You must have faith in God, faith in Guru, faith in the words of the scriptures, and faith in yourself to attain that goal. So Shraddhaya, endowed with faith. That you must have faith that if I follow these teachings, if I follow this path, ultimately I will attain moksha. And Mat Parama, another quality you must have. Mat Parama means keeping God as your ultimate goal in life. That is your ultimate goal in life. Keep God, always think about God as your ultimate goal in life. And Krishna says, ending this verse, Bhaktaste Ativa Me Priya. Ativa means very, very. Earlier he was saying Priya, Priya, Priya. Now he is saying Ativa Priya. Such devotees who have these qualities are very, very dear to me. So if you have faith, if you keep God as your goal, if you are determined to go through these 5 levels of bhakti with determination, with willpower, Krishna says you are very dear. Now when Krishna says you are very dear to him, means what? If you have these qualities, you are very dear to him, you have faith in him, means what? He will then provide the necessary qualifications for you to move. You have these qualities, then it is becomes Krishna's responsibility to guide you on this path. So to cultivate these 35 qualities, first of all, we have to look at verse 20. Are these the qualities you have? If you have these qualities, then you devote yourself to Lord and He will make your passage smooth to reach the ultimate level of bhakti. So thus we have completed this chapter called Bhakti Yoga, chapter 12. And next week when we meet, we will start with chapter 13. Thus end with a prayer. Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishna Vande Jagat Guru. Thank you. Hare Krishna.